All right, everybody, this is Matthew Aaron of The Matthew Aaron Show, www.thematthewaronshow.com. You could follow us on Twitter, at Matt Aaron Show. It's a new Twitter account. I erased it for a job that got put on hold for the coronavirus because I was afraid that they would read all my stuff and not hire me. So we have a new account. You can follow us at The Matthew Aaron Show on Facebook. And then the easiest way to download our podcast is either through Apple Podcasts or where we've been doing huge numbers is on Spotify. So Spotify's the easiest. You go there, you hit follow, you'll get all our podcasts sent right to you. And today I'm back with Hillary and we're sitting down with Rachel Axler, who I am a huge fan of. You know her work. She is a writer and producer, and I guess do you direct as well? I mean, I know you wrote for New Girl and Children's Hospital.
What don't you do, Rachel, is really what we want to know.
And you were on, of course, most recently, I cannot cook.
I can't cook at all. I'm not. I also do not direct.
Not true. I watched you cook yesterday.
Oh, did you? That's right. She watched me on FaceTime as I reheated some food for my son.
Oh, that's true.
I'm pretty handy with a microwave.
You've been doing what I've been doing with my nephew is you're juggling calls while feeding and all this other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, primarily it was just sort of a social call with Hillary. And she basically like babysat my almost 2-year-old while I like made him lunch.
Well,
it was so much fun. It was the most fun I had all week.
Hillary knows this. Working from home, I don't know how it is for you, Rachel, but working from home is a different beast for me. I get different kinds of work done. So like if I'm not working at home, I get tons of writing done. Like if I go to Chicago for the week and hole up in an apartment someone's lending me, I will get a ton of work done writing-wise. When I'm at home, I do a lot of podcasting, a lot of conference calls, a lot of meetings. But like Hillary knows this, like she'll call me at home and Liam's next to me, my 8-year-old, all the time. My nephew and she'll be like, "Are you talking to me about Mountain Dew?" I'm like, "No, that wasn't you." So I find working at home, I'm doubling up a lot more. You get a different kind of work done. How is it for you working from home? The WFH right now.
I am the type of person who can't write in like coffee shops or
same.
Wherever it is that people. Yeah. Because I feel like that's a sort of performative writing where people are like, look at me writing. And that's not what I'm trying to do. There are people who actually I'm sure get stuff done. I'm not one of those people. I have to be in some sort of solitude. If I'm in a room with other people, they have to be people who are also writing or really like not paying attention to me and not looking at me because I don't know what I look like. Like I'm probably like mouthing things out loud. But usually, and this is even when I'm in an office, I don't write at a desk. I write like sitting on a couch or at home sitting in bed or sitting on a couch. So for some reason, I guess like butt comfortable seats are like my preferred writing venues. So maybe it's just that I feel more like comfortable and that promotes creativity. Also deadlines help. And I am definitely the type of person who works better under pressure, even though I dislike it intensely. So I will sit down and write, you know, an all-nighter, which I haven't been doing as much since I had a kid, but still been able to sort of crank out stuff late at night when there's very little distraction.
Yeah. I feel like I had my coolest schedule as a writer when I was in my 20s and my late teens where I could write till like 6 a.m. and no one cares that you slept from 7 to, you know, like 3 p.m. or whatever. And now, now I can't do that. Now writing's like a job, which sucks to a degree.
Right.
Because you're right. You have deadlines and you have to get things done. And even when you don't have deadlines, you kind of do because I don't know, for our listeners, if you're trying to get a script to a certain somebody, you want that mm-hmm. script to get to them before another great script does. Because then what happens is you have to find someone else or your project gets pushed back. So even if they love it, they're like, but I just read this other thing. I'm going to do that first. And you're like, fuck. So you're always secretly under deadline, because if you want to get that project made and you want to get it made soon, you have to do the best job you can and get it to the right people, because everyone's popular and busy. Everyone, producers get sent projects all the time. So, I mean, there's deadlines and then there's the unwritten deadline in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. I'm taking notes right now, by the way. This is very good to say.
Well, I'm assuming Rachel knows this way more than I do.
I've been sort of lucky in that I've had kind of back-to-back jobs for most of my career, which
wow.
is not even that kind of lucky is a is an
I was going to say people may
absurdly,
hate you
absurdly lucky.
Yeah, people may hate you for saying this.
But well, this is not me saying I don't work hard. I definitely work hard,
yeah.
But I haven't had the kind of hustle that you're discussing is something that I definitely experienced at the very beginning, and then. From then, I've been really lucky in that it's been primarily, like, to get the next job, it's primarily been interviews, because they have stuff of mine that they can read already. But nonetheless, what you're talking about, which I think might be more also for film and stuff, which I've never written, I've only written for TV.
Film and pilots. I think for film and pilots, you're always trying to get it out to people before they get the next great project. Yeah.
That completely makes sense.
And
I have yet to write a pilot, which is actually what I'm working on. Yeah, I'm working on right now.
Oh, good for you.
But yeah, first time with that, which is a little insane. But I had written plays before, and they served as a bit of a like calling card or whatever you'd like to call it, as a sample of my writing.
Is that how? Now I think a lot of people that listen to the show, they love to know how to, and I think if they've learned anything from the show, it's there really is no how to in this business. People get jobs 100%. In a million different ways. But I do think it helps them to know how you got into your first writer's room and your experience
totally.
With how other people got into their first writer's room, because you've worked your way up in writer's rooms where now you may be doing the interviewing, you may be doing the reading and the hiring. So how do you get into your first writer's room?
Sure. I can tell you how I got in, exactly
yeah.
what you said, not how one gets in, but
right.
my path was strange, but all of them are, or most of them are, I think. I was a playwright. I wrote, I'm trying to figure out how early I start this so as not to be super boring, but I went to grad school for playwriting, and during that,
you skipped over the important part.
Which was that?
You started from grad school. How dare you?
I'm sorry. Should I start in college? All right. So yeah. I was born in.
just for our footnote. Just for our footnote.
There it is.
So let me revise.
And then after
I'm,
that.
I'm gonna start earlier. Hillary and I met in Williamstown, Massachusetts, at Williams College, where she was a star in the English department, and I was a theater nerd. And some English professors had a birthday party for their little kids, and she and I were kind of the entertainment at the party for some reason. And I was dressed up as Little Red Riding Hood from Into the Woods, which is a role I played. And Hillary and I spent the entire party running around with children riding on our backs. And that is how I got my first job.
Wow.
Okay,
I was going to say, here's the relevance.
All right. So,
so you get your master's.
Okay, now we can continue. Right,
so, yeah.
So after Hillary and I met and I started on my path toward TV, I definitely, there was a professor in college who basically said you should be a writer. And that was a guy named Jim Shepherd, who's an amazing, amazing writer.
I love Jim Shepherd.
And he was the first person to say, you should do this, for a living. This is what you are. Until then I kind of thought I was an actor and I was wrong, it turns out. he was right. I wound up going to grad school for playwriting. And during grad school, I was watching a lot of The Daily Show, which I was watching on my roommate's TV, which was like, I mean, none of us, nobody has money in grad school. We were, you know, but I was basically watching it. We didn't have cable, so I was watching like taped versions from someone else's cable that I was like, I mean, using literally like cassette tapes.
Yeah.
And watching it and sort of going, how do they do this? How do they write this? This show is brilliant. And sort of writing my own versions of their headlines at home, which was in a sense practicing, not in a sense, I guess in every sense it was practicing.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually reached out to someone there. I found an email address. Reached out to someone there who wound up being Jason Riesch, who was a great, great writer there, who had been the writer's assistant. But because we were watching tapes, so I was not watching The Daily Show in a timely manner. it turns out he had, in the time between my seeing his name and writing to him, been promoted from writer's assistant to writer. So I wound up writing to one of the writers, although I thought I was writing to an assistant. And I basically just asked how he got that assistant position there, like, you know, and how he thought I could possibly get a foot in the door. I was not trying to be like, hire me. I was just trying to say,
right,
in a very non-jerky way, how did you do this? And he wrote back and he's like, well, I'm actually a writer now. And he was very kind. He gave me the actual assistant's info and said, you know, you can call for a packet and they'll send you submissions guidelines. So I got those. I sat with them for over a year.
Oh my God.
And no, seriously, because I was still in school and I was also just like practicing at home. Then went back to New York, which is where I'm from. Grad school was in San Diego. Went back to New York, started taking class. I was also temping. I started taking a class at, People's Improv Theater, the Pit, called,
oh, yeah,
Writing for the Daily Show with a guy named J.R. Havlin, who was a writer on the show from day one, like Craig Kilborn days.
Wow.
And he was the person teaching this particular class. And my thought was that I would, my very sort of overly, you know, thought out version of like how this was going to go down was I was not going to make it clear who I was so that I could do like a version of blind submissions, even though I was literally in a classroom with him. Because we gave in all of our assignments via email. So astonishingly, it somewhat worked. He didn't quite know who I was. He figured out who I was,
yeah,
pretty quickly by like maybe the third class. He was just like, who wrote this joke? And then by the end of the class, he came up to me and he was like, okay, so what do you want to do with your life? And I said, what you do? And he said, right, sure, but you can't do that. So what do you actually want to do right now? And I said, right, I want to write comedy. I would love to write for a show like The Daily Show. And we started writing together because he thought that I was sort of good enough for that. And he was looking for someone to sort of write some other things with, none of which went anywhere, but that's a whole nother story. Mm. But through this, I sort of got practice writing with a professional comedy writing and also a friendship out of it, which was amazing. And I was still temping. I was temping in a law firm. It was not fun. And got an email from him saying, like, drop everything. They just announced that they're hiring at The Daily Show. I can't, like, super help you beyond this. Like, you know that you're good enough. I know that you're good enough. Start writing a packet right now and send it in. Hmm. And that is actually what happened. I wrote a packet. I sent it in. He was able, once it got to a certain point, to actually vouch for me and say, oh, I know her, because I was a nobody, you know?
Yeah.
And the head writer at the time, David Javerbaum, called me and said, we think it shows promise. Can you do it again? And I said, absolutely. Mm. And I stayed home. I mean, I guess I quit my job because it was a temp job. I quit it. I was like, this is my life. I have to do this. Like, this is it. Like, this is, it's now or, you know, whatever. So, stayed home, wrote it. They interviewed me. I got the job. It was nuts.
Wow.
And, That was
so
the beginning
it's
of that.
It's a little bit of it's a lot of talent mixed with connections, which mixed with luck,
mm-hmm.
and that seems to be how a lot of people. Go ahead.
And committing to it,
right?
I love the moment where you committed to it and you quit a temp job, which must have been so scary,
yes.
and brave, and you said, "This is it." Like, the commitment is really inspiring.
Yeah, I think that's.
I mean, to be fair, most of the temp job at the time was a lawyer trying to get me to find him a piece of glass that was reflective enough that he could use it as like a dry erase board. But I was calling like marble shops. Maybe it was marble. I had to find marble. I was calling marble shops in freaking like Italy. I'm not kidding. And like, I don't speak Italian. It was not the best job.
We need to get Rachel.
That sounds like a scenario that you would write.
I was gonna say we need to get Rachel a superhero movie. We'll call her book then From Marble to Marvel, and then that's my title for your book.
Oh, come on. Yeah.
You know what? But you know what is so interesting, and I think this is a lesson. So there is no one way to get in the business, but I think two things that Rachel just said is the lesson that you need to take away from this is, one, it's talent, it's networking, and it's luck. And that you just can't know when or where, but that's what you have to do. And two, what Hillary said, and this is huge, because I know a lot of, you know, hobby writers and hobby directors and hobby actors. You pretty much need to quit what you're doing and do this full time. Even if you're not getting paid, that's the risk you kind of have to take.
I'm trying to nod very loudly right now.
I'm not saying don't be a waiter. I'm not saying quit your waiter job. If you're allowed to leave for auditions, that's awesome. But like, this is another full-time job. And so if you're expecting to write a script in Iowa and that's the only thing you have to do, it's not. The odds of that happening are rare.
Matt, I had an acting teacher once put it this way to me, because I, you know, was acting and I was writing and I still am. I still am a freelance writer. It's kind of my day job. But at some point he said, you have to decide if you're an actor who writes or a writer who acts.
Yep. Well, my dad and I had a massive disagreement over where to go for college. He wouldn't let me go to UCLA, wouldn't let me go to USC. I got into both. I got into UNC. I've never to this day opened up my NYU acceptance or denial letter because I don't want to know.
Really?
I don't want to know. Well,
my God.
Because I don't want to hate my dad. I don't want to hate my dad. So I had to go to a school
in
Illinois. Okay. But this is how it was put to me, and this is why I was really bummed out. Like, sort of the same as Hillary, it was put to me in high school. I was already writing scripts. They were terrible. All my scripts were terrible for like 10 years, by the way. And Richard Roper would argue they still are. So, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. It was put to me like this. They make cars in Detroit. They make movies and TV in LA. And that's that. And that's all I needed to hear. I'm like, yeah, I can't make a car in Illinois. And so it turns into this thing where it's like, this has to be a career. This has to be a full-time thing. And you have to. You have to. So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, well, I used to call it...
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just saying I used to call it tunnel vision. Like, I used to picture it like, you know how people used to roll the tops of their baseball caps like super, super tiny, and it was this very bro-y thing that I pictured it kind of like that, like you're looking through the incredibly rolled top of a baseball cap, and like that is your focus, that is what you're doing right now, and you know you just can't let yourself be distracted from it. I do think that a lot of sort of younger people who are just starting out have their fingers in different sort of parts of creating things, and sure. That is, I think, perfectly valid right now.
Awesome. It's
I don't
awesome.
Think it was at the time, but now because of I don't even want to, I sound so old, but like YouTube and Instagram and whatever it is, TikTok. Yeah. I just referenced the thing I will never know about.
You know enough to reference it, though. That's all that counts.
Sure. I know how to spell it. We're good.
Yeah, right.
But, well, Rachel.
Yeah, go ahead, Hill.
Oh, sorry.
No.
Do you have another point?
No, go ahead.
I was going to ask Rachel, I wanted you to talk about, once you landed at The Daily Show, what you walked into there, specifically as a woman, as a female writer on staff.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it'd be interesting for people to hear just kind of what your experience was like in that when you walked in there and started working there.
Well, and there was a drama.
Yeah, sure.
There was a drama for a while with The Daily Show about Jon Stewart hiring a boys club. And that's what's interesting about Hillary's question is, at one point in time, Jon was called out for having a lot of men that worked there. So, yeah, I'm curious, too.
Right.
What was that situation like?
Well, I was the only woman at the time. It changed while I was, well, it didn't fully change while I was there. We wound up with a female writer's assistant who then became a writer, and then there were several other female writers after me, and there still are many. Yeah, I was the only female in the writer's wing, as we called it, sort of the little wing of the office that we all secluded ourselves in and wrote in. They asked me about it in my interview, actually. They asked whether I'd be comfortable being the only woman because they were only hiring one person at the time, and they were, at the time, an all-male staff. I said absolutely. I had sort of in college, Hillary, I feel like you maybe know this. In college, for whatever reason, all of my like suite mates were male for a very long time. Which is not to say I am not one of those people who is like, I only have guy friends. I think my closest friends are probably women, but I have always been able to get along with men and women, as long as they're good people of either stripe, you know, that's cool. They were really kind to me. I don't think it ever was an issue, a problem, called out anything. Like, I know that there was all that controversy, which was just after I left. But it was, my experience there. My experience there was great. The learning curve is steep. You have to learn the program that they write in, which I think it was just called AP. It was just the Associated Press's, like, I guess, news program program that you write in that went, goodness gracious, this is so long ago. It went straight into the teleprompter for John. So you'd have
oh,
to.
Oh, wow.
I think we wrote in all caps. Emphasis was achieved by putting quotation marks around something. It was a whole new sort of like strange copy standard of it. Just learning literally how to format things was interesting.
Yeah.
So in the first few weeks there, and I mean, I went in and my first day I was, you know, thrown into the fray with everyone. It's just like, all right, here are the headlines. You're on this one. Go.
Wow.
So my first few packets that I handed in were absolute shit. I mean, really, really terrible. But I did get a joke on my first day, which I got in through what we called a gang, which doesn't sound like a fun thing, but it was when everyone stood around one computer and sort of pitched on alternate punchlines for a joke. And I got a joke in off of a gang on the very first day, which is pretty cool because one of the things that I was up against, my own problem, for much of my time there and also just subsequently, is that I have a quiet voice.
Yeah.
And I'm not a very like jump in and state my piece type of person. I'd rather be read than, you know, have to speak
fight.
And sort of speak up for myself. I've gotten way better at it. Mm. Way better.
I was gonna say, Rachel, I've watched you do it on Veep. I watched you do it on set one day when you guys all pitched. I was like, yeah, Rachel.
Oh,
go
did you
Rachel.
Really? Oh, did I
yeah,
actually speak up? I'm really not great at it, but I definitely
you did.
I've definitely
sold.
Gotten better. I mean, and now I sound
totally.
So flippant, like, oh, did I really sound like that? But yeah, no.
No, I am.
I have enough confidence to know that my ideas are good. The question is really just a literal, like, take a deep breath, support your voice, like, actually speak up.
Well, my favorite film last year, and it sounds like they get a lot of this accurate, is Late Night with Emma Thompson and Mindy Kaling. And it was my favorite film all last year, and I see everything. And it's just, I mean, it just was right in my wheelhouse though. It, you know, female leads, it was like diverse, like it's just stuff that I really love, but it was about writing. And it sounds very similar to your experience at The Daily Show. So that's, I'm like sitting here right now going, wow, that movie got a lot right.
I mean, she would know. Mindy.
Sure.
I mean, she.
With
she,
The Office,
she
yeah.
is the real deal.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
And she was probably the only woman at The Office at the time, too, I think, in the writer's room.
I think Alison Silverman was there.
Was she there at the beginning?
That is a really good question. I don't know.
Yeah, me either.
Maybe she wasn't there at the beginning. There was, I'm blanking on her name. Jen, something with a C was also there.
Mm.
Anyway, whatever.
But she knows what it's like to be in a room
that,
like
you know,
that.
Mindy was there as like a staff writer and was an exceptional writer. Greg Daniels would talk about her, like about what an incredible writer she was. So she clearly had to sort of figure out how to step up and pitch her own ideas as well.
Yeah. 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 No, it's a great movie. if you haven't
important
seen
part
it.
Of, yeah. I think that's Rachel. I think that's a hard thing for a lot of women just in general and across all aspects of this industry.
Oh, I'm sure.
Is figuring out where to step in, how to step in, and how to state your case and stand by it without coming across like a total raging bitch. So yeah,
yeah, it's a fun line to tread, isn't it? But yeah, no, it wasn't really. I guess what I'm trying to say is it wasn't a problem that other people had. Foist upon me, you know, it was a problem that was a self-inflicted.
But
guess,
it does
problem.
Make it harder though. Now, in your defense, and I've talked about this, when you live in a business that was mostly male dominated, and now we're trying to give it some parity, it makes it harder for any woman, whether they're an actress, a writer, even a director,
Hey Matt, I got to stop you. To me, you're cutting out. I don't know if Rachel can hear you.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Oh, no. To me too. I was hoping it wasn't just me.
Am I not cutting out anymore?
You're good now. Yeah.
Okay. So what I was saying was, in the defense of Rachel, she's being kind of humble, but like women in a male-dominated industry, this has been a thing that's kind of imposed upon you, where it makes it kind of hard for you to speak out because you're not surrounded by, you're surrounded by your peers, but when you look around a room and you barely or don't see anyone else that looks like you, that adds another intimidation factor to it, which makes you go, I don't know if my ideas are totally accepted in this place. I don't want people to think, oh, that's a woman idea, or that's a female idea, or, you know, if you're a minority, that's a, you know, a minority idea. And that's the ideas you get in your head before you should, because people need to know there's a lot of neuroses with writers. So there's like 80 things in your head before you pitch an idea. You're like, am I going to sound stupid? Am I going to da-da-da-da-da? I hope I don't get fired. I hope they don't think I have no talent. But I've been saying this for a long time, and this is why one of Hillary and I's goals is to really focus on people that haven't had their stories told, or their stories have been told a lot lesser. It's important because these people need to be able to look around and see people that look like them, and it helps your confidence. It helps who you are be more confident.
True. Yeah, absolutely.
So I hope I made that clear, at least. I don't know if it was off the cuff, but...
Oh, no, that was very clear. I have... Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Hill.
Well, to your point, you don't know who's paying attention. You don't know who's seeing you. And I remember, Rachel, years ago, you told me for The Daily Show, when The Daily Show won the Emmy and you were up on stage with everybody... Somebody approached you. I want to say it was the guy who created The Blacklist. Is it Franklin?
Oh,
is that his name?
No idea.
Franklin Leonard.
Many years later.
Yeah, but I remember you had told me, like, when he met you, he said, I've been following your career and I'm a fan.
Oh.
And you were like, what are you talking about? And he was like, I remember when The Daily Show won the Emmy and you were the only woman on stage, it made me go, who is she? I need to know her. And I wonder, like,
moment. You're totally right. I forgot about that.
Right. I love that story.
Yeah.
But it also makes me wonder, like, you know, women in the audience or who's watching and who's paying attention. And I think you being the only female writer on staff, you know, was important.
I definitely wore a color that I knew would stand out. <I'm> like, it didn't hurt that I'm like a foot and a half shorter than everyone else on that staff, but I was like, no way am I wearing black to this thing. I'm going to wear like guys are all going to wear these black suits. And I wore like a sort of bright, like sherbert color.
Sherbert.
It was really fun.
It worked. I mean, I think it's about like seeing yourself and representation, and Franklin clocked you. And I'm sure a lot of people clocked you and were like, I need to know who she is. Like, that's interesting.
Yeah, I had completely forgotten that. That's absolutely true. Man, isn't he great on Twitter?
That's fascinating.
He's fabulous. Yeah.
That's so good. So I think the other thing, you've been on all these like hit TV shows like The New Girl and even Children's Hospital. I remember
Parks and Rec.
I have to look around the room, make sure my nephew's not here. But in my late 20s, we used to go to this weed shop all the time and we'd sit and watch Children's Hospital live, like every Wednesday, or I forget what it was on, Wednesday or Thursday or something. And, that was kind of our thing to do.
I feel like that show, first of all, that was one of the most fun shows to write for ever. it was just that whole process was just nuts. I love that show so much. That show also was like what I think first truly impressed my brother, who it was sort of in his wheelhouse. Younger brother, but it was definitely, that was more, among the shows that like his friends watched, and he was just like, wait, You wrote one of those episodes. I was like, I wrote two of them, Dan.
Yeah, that was our jam. We'd watch that and then King of the Hill, and I would be in heaven. then of course Veep, which is like the funniest show ever made. How did you get involved with Veep? I'm curious about that, because that seemed to have not only just launched you as a writer in the HBO hemisphere, but also as a producer. Totally. So how did you end up writing and producing over at Veep?
Well, okay, so just two things. One is that, so producer, as you probably know, but I'm just going to say this.
Sure.
So producer, as a title, in the TV writing world, is actually more of like a hierarchical thing than actually what you would think of as a producer. Although, once you get to the EP level, you are definitely in meetings with the network and studio that other people are not. But in general, it's something that's tagged onto your title that doesn't necessarily mean that you're doing what other producers. I think it's considered creative producer, or writing producer, or whatever. Anyway, just to say that, because it didn't change what I was doing. It just changed sort of the level of
but you got sort of to that level
I was expected to give.
Yeah, you got to that level there. And that for people that know, producing means so many different things. So it could be so many different jobs. But in Rachel's case, in TV, it's like a different hierarchy in TV writing. You're higher up in the writer's room, if you will. So how'd that come about? Was that just from your experience previous, and it was or did you start writing there and work your way into it?
No, I was already, I'm trying to remember. I think I came in as supervising producer, which is, I think, where I was just, in the hierarchy of titles, where I was at some point. Because you start being a producer starts being your title pretty early on. I'd had that in my title for several jobs before that, but I started, I think, as supervising and then moved up to co-EP in my final year, which was awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome.
And again, it's just, it really is though, just, number of years that you're working at a place.
Yeah.
I mean, unless I guess something goes super wonky in negotiations and they decide that you're not ready to move up. But
well, was the job offered to you, or did you know people on the show?
Okay, so I interviewed for it. Mm. I had done one other HBO show a couple years back. I did Bored to Death.
Mm-hmm.
I worked on Bored to Death.
Jason Schwartzman.
So I'd worked. Yes, exactly. It's so much fun. I had worked on an HBO show before, but not for several years. So I already knew some of the people there, so didn't need that sort of second step of meeting the people at the network, which you sometimes need to do if they're not aware of your work or who you are. but it was actually a really cool thing, which I hope will be inspiring to somebody listening, which is that I actually got the interview because I lost out at another job.
Hmm.
And I'd interviewed, and it was down to me and one other writer who I wound up working with later on Veep, astonishingly.
Mm-hmm.
But it was down to me and one other writer for Kimmy Schmidt, which is a show that I flip and adore as well. And I had this wonderful phone interview with Tina Fey. And ultimately they chose the other writer. And then several weeks later, Dave Mandel, the guy who was coming in as the showrunner for Veep, was looking for a female writer at my level. And asked his good friends, Tina Fey and Robert Carlock, who were the, creators and executive producers of Kimmy Schmidt. And he said, do you know anybody? And they said, yes, there's this woman that we just interviewed, and we didn't hire her because we chose someone else, but we think she's great. And on their recommendation, which thank you so much to them.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So even when you get passed up for a job, everything's good for you. You're like, I have back-to-back gigs all the time.
I was hoping that the takeaway would be more like less yay me and more like
no, it is. I'm just busting.
Try
chops.
To do a great job on everything because But no, I mean,
I could totally see you writing on Kimmy Schmidt too. By the way, Kimmy Schmidt is so your real
sure. Sure.
You know what though? I got to keep that as like, because once you're writing on a show, you're so close to it that watching it while still enjoyable is not at all the same experience.
Right.
Because you know everything that's been cut out, and you also know everything that's coming, you know. So
you got
to
enjoy Kimmy Schmidt.
As like exactly. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. Where I was coming from that I'm laughing is like most writers, when they get turned down for a job, they're like, oh, did I get brought in as a favor? Were they just being nice, et cetera, et cetera? The people that turned you down offered you up a job on an Emmy Award winning TV show. So they're like, let's help you with that. It's so good.
Again, I'll just go with absurdly lucky. Sure. So I met Dave. We had an interview. We talked about the show for a couple hours. I feel like it was fantastic. I was so comfortable with him. He's so, so smart and funny and generous and such a great guy. And got offered the show, which was incredibly exciting.
And shockingly, you know, I knew so many people that were like, after Armando left the show, we all of us fans of the show were like, oh man, this next season's gonna be rough. But it was the last two seasons were just as good as the Armando seasons.
So good.
I don't know how you guys held it together, but man, it just shows how much talent's in that room. What a great last season. I didn't expect it. It's hard to be great in your final season.
And I feel like I'm talking about a show that I didn't even work on when I say, I know. Like, I have such immense respect for, like, what Dave did with that finale, which I think is brilliant, like absolutely brilliant, and I've watched it so many times. But yeah, I mean, he tied stuff together in a way that like only, and maybe this is where it's good that he didn't create the show, that he came in, because he came in as such a fan of the show that he gave us the finale that like a fan would want, like, you know, tying together stuff from literally from the pilot, pulling that back in, like the Tom Hanks joke at the end. He's good, right?
I saw a conspiracy on the internet that, and people are really into this, that when him and Rita came home and they showed those pictures of them home, they're like, they're in a military vehicle, and that's from months ago. And the government's trying to trick you. And I'm like, oh man, the crazies are out there.
Wait, but what would the trick be?
Yeah, that they're in a Navy. I couldn't get what's the narrative here. It's worse than what we're being told, or it's or they work for a government spy agency. I'm missing what is going on here.
Right. Is the trick that they never had it in the first place, or they have it and it's worse and these are doubles, or
that's right.
I'm gonna pick up a lot of things. We can make them all
could
up
be
right
any
now.
Any number of things, yeah.
That's right. So like what do you have that you said you were working on a pilot? What are you trying to do in the future? Anything specific?
I won't give you like the pitch for it because I haven't pitched it anywhere yet. And
do not.
That is my hope. I'm I'm on a deal with HBO right now, which is amazing. And I'm starting on a show of theirs very soon, possibly this coming week, called Betty, which will come out soon. Really, really awesome show about female skateboarders. You will see it. It's awesome. Mm. And I'll be working on season two of that, which I'm very excited about. And
awesome.
I mean, beyond that, my goals in general are both small and huge, which are I just want to continue writing, like, for
right.
as long as they let me. So whoever they is. So, so, you know, maybe doesn't sound ambitious. Maybe it is, but it's what I love to do and it's what I enjoy doing. And I just hope I remain lucky enough to continue doing it for a very long time. That would be awesome.
Do you see yourself doing more theater too?
I would love to get back into that.
Yeah.
That's
what we were trying to do this year. I'm like, I'd love to get back into that. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been doing the only theater stuff I've been doing for the most part is, I've been doing these 24-hour plays, which are really fun.
Wow.
Oh, they're so brilliant.
Yeah.
So brilliant.
And what's great about them is how incredibly time and energy limited they are, because it's basically just a sprint. You know, you do something overnight. And then
90
you produce it
seconds.
The next day, and that's it. And it's over. And you have that, like, high of, like, creation that but it only took you a day. And so that's great. That's great because it's also something that you can do while working at another job. Whereas, you know, actually trying to, I don't know, people do it, I suppose. I've done a couple
aren't
of things.
Aren't they also doing,
called,
oh, aren't they doing the,
oh, no, sorry,
for,
60 seconds,
Rach, the 24 hour plays?
Yes.
Are they?
Yes, they're doing what they're calling viral monologues. And I've written two of them so far. And they're really fun too. It's pretty much the same thing. They like pair you with an actor and send you, a short video of the actor introducing him or herself and saying, you know, this is where I have, like, location wise to shoot, basically showing you a location in their house or something, and showing you a costume element that they might be able to wear and a prop that they could use, and then giving you something should you choose to use it, which I always like to do, that they'd like to do on screen that they've
seconds.
Never done on screen. So my first one, I got to work with David Cross, which was incredible.
Wow.
And his location, he gave a choice of several locations within his house. I chose the bathroom, not realizing that he meant in his bathtub, which was the best thing ever. But he sat in his bathtub for the whole thing. And his costume element was an admiral's hat and his prop, which made the whole thing brilliant, was a bag of hamburger buns, which just was already funny just alone. So
random.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, that's great. Well, is there anything else you need to plug or promote? I'd love to continue talking. I got this good doctor interview I got to do, and like I haven't even seen the show. shouldn't probably say that, but
oh, go do it. Go do it.
Oh,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
I've got nothing to plug.
I know. I could talk to you all day. I've seen all your
thanks
stuff.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And I hope we can get together as soon as this thing's over.
That would be amazing.
Corona thing. Yeah. I never thought I'd say this, but I miss LA. So.
Well, aww. I hope you will be welcomed back as soon as. You know, people are allowed to move again.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, thanks.
In the meantime,
Hillary.
In the meantime,
yeah.
I love I was going to say, in the meantime, I love that Rachel is working and getting new jobs. It's hope for all of us.
Oh, I know. I know. I'm about to bust.
It's a bright little light in a very dark tunnel.
I'm about to bust Beacon Pictures chops about that. I'm going to be like, hey, I know people getting hired.
Hey.
Well, thank you so much, Rachel and Hill, of course.
Thank
as
you so
always.
Much for having me.
Yeah, thank you. And then we'll talk
Thanks,
soon.
Rachel.
Love you, Hillary.
All right, ladies.
Love
talk
you too,
to you later.
All right, okay. Bye.
Bye.